Hello and welcome to the Sleeper 2022 podcast series. This is a series of conversations with the major players in the world of hospitality experience and design. Today is Bastille Day, and the Tour de France sees today's stage finish at the top of the 21 hairpins of Alpe d'Huez. So I'm delighted to be introducing a Frenchman, Pierre Charles Cross, who has kindly found time to talk to us on his national day. He is one of three school friends who, aged 18, made a profit on organizing a New Year's Eve's party for other friends. We will find out how this has led to the creation of a hospitality business, the Experimental Group, that spans bars, wine bars, restaurants, beach clubs, and hotels. Their success sees venues in big cities such as Paris, London, and New York, plus more recently Venice, as well as a group of smaller resorts popular with a certain discerning audience, including Verbier, St. Moritz, Menorca, and Ibiza. And it was at the experimental beach just past the salt flats of Las Salinas on Ibiza where Sleeper Magazine hosted a dinner for their sleepover event in 2019. Today we will explore what makes the Experimental Group different, their plans for post-pandemic expansion, the importance of discovery and gut feeling, and their approach to collaboration. I'm Guy Dietrich, Editor-at-Large of Sleeper Magazine, and this is the Sleeper 2022 podcast series. Pierre Charles, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Guy. Super happy to be here on Bastille Day.
Yes, thank you very much for making time for us. I wanted to start at the beginning with your relationship with Romy de Guraniov and Oliver Bon. That was in 2007, well, before that, because you were school friends, but that's when you started out in business. And then were joined in 2010 by a fourth business partner, Xavier Padovani. Can you tell us a little bit about how things started for you guys?
So yeah, we're friends from childhood, really, you know, with Olivier and Romé. With Olivier, actually, we've been, you know, friends for over 30 years now. And still counting, all met, you know, like, yeah, all went through, like, you know, the life at school and then university, and decided to, give a try of our own to being entrepreneurs.
And you certainly seem like you're enjoying it. So you went to school together. That's sort of reasonable, I would say. But then to all go to the same university, and that was in Montreal?
Yeah, sort of. I mean, we all ended up being in Montreal for a period of time, not necessarily on the same path. So I was studying like a bachelor in management. Romé was more in finance, and Olivier did fashion design sort of school. So then we went back, you know, to different places. I stayed in Montreal, graduated from there, and a couple of years later, we all, you know, gathered back in Paris, actually.
So fantastic. No real hospitality experience except for being on the one side of the bar, enjoying yourself and having fun.
Exactly.
But then decided to get stuck in yourselves. Yeah. What made you do that, apart from the fact that it sounded like seemed like a really good idea at the time?
I think the option of, you know, let's try to join, you know, work and passion was very tempting. It could have been a wine bar, it could have been a restaurant, it ended up being a cocktail bar because we had this discovery of cocktails in North America, especially in New York, and it was an epiphany. You know, we tried drinks that were like good enough to have for breakfast, so we were like, wow, you know, probably if you serve them at night, that's going to be fantastic. And we came back to Paris, and the cocktail culture was, I think, sort of not really there. There was a few options in, you know, like sort of dusty hotel bars, overpriced and not necessarily doing anything crafted. So we felt, you know, we just felt like a huge opening, and we jumped in it. Yeah, with, as you said, virtually zero experience, but a strong experience as a customer, which is, I think, quite important. A lot of energy and passion and envy, you know. And I can't remember even how we did to open the bar, and we were the bartenders, you know, initially, and our simple objective was to do one of the best cocktail bars in the world.
So let's talk a little bit about, the bars and the wine bars came soon afterwards, the cocktail bars. My first experience of one of yours was the Experimental Cocktail Club in Gerrard Street, Chinatown in London, finding the little sort of scruffy door, going upstairs, seeing the pressed metal ceiling and everything. Were you just starting small and seeing how you got on? How did that work?
I think initially we were three. We're like, okay, let's have three or four bars, and then, you know, take it from there and see how we can manage. But quickly, you know, you do one, you do two, you do three, you do four, you do five, you don't stop, it works. You adapt your role from, you know, being a bartender to supervise, you know, like several bars to being then really a manager. And we moved up the ladder of the hospitality business. The hotel was not necessarily here day one, but quickly became a goal because we realized that obviously it's sort of like the pinnacle, you know, in the hospitality, and it's where you can put everything under the same roof. And from an investment and a capital point of view, I mean, it's much more demanding, but also rewarding. So we started, actually, I remember we visited our first hotel. Probably we had two or three bars and we were like completely bluffing. Absolutely, you know, there was no way we could even, you know, like give it a try from a capital point of view. But we wanted to get familiar, you know, with the driver of the business, you know, what was the price, what was the thing. So we visited a couple of hotels. And as soon as we had, you know, the right platform and the right, you know, financial, you know, like footprint, we went for it, you know, in 2014, 2015. That was a grand pinnacle.
So describe that hotel to us. I mean, it's a 9th arrondissement. It's 37 guest rooms.
It was a perfect way. Pretty much same way that Experimental Cocktail Club, the first one that we still have in the Montorgueil area, was, you know, I couldn't dream of a better place to start. And to do our first cocktail bar that we still, you know, own and operate. Grand Pigalle is the same for the hotel. It means the building is extremely Parisian. At the same time, this part of town, which we call now Sopi, you know, South Pigalle, was a great area of change, an area of change in Paris, which is rare, right? Because Paris is a pretty static city. It was a derelict hotel. It was not open to the public anymore. It was like a social housing hotel, if you wish. So everything had to be done in a scale that was the definition of the boutique hotel. We did that feeling of, you know, walking into something that you belong to, very soft, nice material, you know, carpeting, keeping all the details of the building. And to this day, I think a lot of people love it for that reason, you know, because it's probably the right size. It's not too big, it's not too small. So it was perfect for us, and we could express ourselves into how do we see a hotel, you know, what it is for you, what it is for us, the code of hospitality, and a lot of ideas that we developed there are still, you know, part and parcel of what we do now.
Tell us a bit then about the whole ethos of the Experimental Group, this idea of discovery and experimentation in your way of doing business.
Yeah, so first, I mean, the name Experimental was quite perfect, and it was really like leading to, you know, experiencing something, you know, trying, discovering, being curious. And that's what we do. We love something and we want to share it with more people. First our friends, and now, you know, and friends and family and our customer, which we treat, you know, the same way. So it's always been that notion of surprising maybe with one hand, reassuring with the other one. And that's been, yeah, like a red line that we've been following since in all our places.
What about the different roles that the four of you play?
Yeah, from the very start, the idea was to be able that everybody could do everything. First, because when you're a small organization, you need to be flexible and you have probably like 10 different roles in a day and it's important. Then when you want to extend to several, you know, like locations, several countries, it's the same. You know, you need to cover the territory. And then,
isn't there a potential chance there for overlap of roles?
Yeah, but it's part and parcel of our decision process, which means this overlap, this sharing of knowledge means every decision we take, sometimes from a silly one, which is, you know, the color of the napkin of the new place, to obviously the big one, which is, are we doing this place? Are we going there? Is a strong internal debate, sometimes quite often very animated. But that so far, you know, produced something that was like a real synergy, you know, better than, you know, greater than just a simple sum of the parts. But in terms of us, the managing partner, the way we take the decision, if we cannot convince one another, we are capable of, like, you know, letting it go because we feel like, okay, maybe even the one who is against has something that we don't see. And I think we need to be fully aligned. Now, the role over the years obviously got a bit more specialized, you know, like Romain and myself, we're a bit more on the finance, you know, corporate side. Olivier Xavier are a bit more on the marketing. But essentially, we still like to share everything. And I love me, you know, I love going in the same day from, yeah, talking about a small technical problem with somebody in my staff to a huge fundraise to a design meeting, you know, later in the day or a tasting of food.
You talked there about some potential issues with staffing. Staffing is a major problem in these post-pandemic times for operators at all scales. How are you coping with those issues?
It is a major issue. Look, we don't have like a, I don't think. I mean, I'm still looking for the magical recipe about that. We rely heavily. We always been relying heavily on internal, you know, training, internal promotion. We have a lot of people, you know, moving up. Within the group, we're offering a lot of mobility between different places, different country, different industry. We have people who move, you know, from pure F&B to hotel or to the office. So thank God for that. We always had, you know, a strong base, low turnover for the industry. So we may not be suffering as much.
This idea of internal promotion as well, I see also a lot of women coming through on that program, staying with you and sticking with you. That sort of celebration of diversity, is that a conscious decision or just the way it worked out?
I think it's always been for us from day one. I mean, it's quite funny as now a lot of issue become, you know, like everybody thinking about it, about diversity, about gender, like equality between men and women, a difference of salary, about, you know, like difference of pay. And it's great. But for us, we never had to fix the problem because it was never a problem. And right now, I think in higher position, we probably have like a vast majority of women. It's always been part and parcel of our company.
Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about how the operations work and really the revenue streams coming from different sectors, from the bars, from the restaurants, from the hotels, how they differ, and perhaps which of those is most profitable.
Yeah, of course. So right now we have 10 hotels that are up and running in operations, and about the same number. I mean, in each hotel you'll find, you know, bars and restaurants, and we have like about 10 other places, like, you know, like say maybe 7 or 8 standalone. If we look like actually right now, we're probably at 50% revenue from F&B and 50% from hotels, roughly, you know. Hotels are more profitable for sure. They have a higher, you know, like a higher level of EBITDA margin or whichever way you want to measure it. You know, it is more profitable than F&B, where in the F&B, the food part is the most difficult. It is for us extremely difficult if you want to have like great quality offer. You don't cut corners. You propose like real food, you know, real ingredients. It's higher margin on the rooms, lower margin on food, and in between margin on drinks, especially cocktails. So all in all, you know, a good blend.
Let's turn a little bit now perhaps towards the design side of things.
Yeah, look, we love... I think design is a great way, obviously, to express your ideas, to determine, you know, the customer journey in your property. Plus, we love old property most of the time. I think, 100% so far of our properties are like, you know, very old buildings that had a history, probably several years before. And when we are like, you know, like taking them over and thinking with our designer about what to do, it's a way to respect, you know, the past, look at the future, bridge both without too many compromise, but taking into account, you know, the logic of a building, trying to extract, you know, the maximum soul in a way of it. Then it all depends on the market. So it means we don't have a specific plan. Honestly, some people, sometimes some investors and everything, they say, okay, like we see a place, they say, oh, okay, what you're going to do, what's going to be the offer, what it's going to be like. And I'm like, I have no idea, you know, at this stage. What I know is like, I love the place. I think there is some very interesting, you know, architectural features, things you cannot change, the location, the light, the position. With that, I know we're going to do something fantastic. But for that, we're going to need some time. We're going to need to dive in, you know, the place itself. Spend probably like 2, 3, 4 months, you know, with our designer to extract the initial sort of mock-up room, if it's a hotel or initial, you know, like tangible design. And then we're lucky enough to work with very talented people. And so we're working obviously a lot with Dorothy Medic Sun, designing, you know, like 90% of our place now, while still being fundamentally independent. So she's bringing a lot, you know, she's bringing a lot. We know each other, but at the same time, she's, you know, working on so many other projects. She's bringing inspiration. Again, that mix of history of the building, of the neighborhood, and sort of the take we want to have on this property. So in Grand Boulevard in Paris, for instance, it's a building that was finished just before the French Revolution. And it's even, you know, like more interesting being Bastille Day today. So there was an element of, you know, what is the French Revolution? You know, Marie Antoinette, Louis XVI, some elements that were definitely present at the time. You know, that's the beauty of history. So she went, that's sort of like knitting, you know, around there, taking a little bit of some elements without being a cliche, but there is that some of that red marble. There is some, a lot of the garden element, which was very strong. It's like a oasis, you know, from the Grand Boulevard, which is a super busy area, lots of traffic, lots of noise, and we just recess from that. And so you come in and you have more like, you know, greenery, vegetation, the color are like soft, a lot of drapes, a lot of linen. Because you're in a little cocoon in a way, but you're just there, right? You step out and you're in the busiest area of Paris.
And we were in that little cocoon for breakfast a few months ago. Right behind me was a whole host of plants, a whole sort of banquette behind the banquette, full of plants, a wall full of plants. And this is, again, a good illustration of the sort of the detail or the ownership that you have for everything. You were there then asking the guys to, you know, talking about the plants, this needs to be chopped, this needs to be moved from here to there, all these sorts of details. And, you know, if you're coming from a finance background, that's quite interesting. You know, not everybody would be interested or even see those issues. So, and again, very interesting property there with this very Parisian touch that Dorothy gives, the sort of jeweled colors, the brass accents, in the rooftop cocktail bar, many of the things that make Experimental Group what they are.
No, she's extremely talented, extremely successful. We're lucky enough also that we grow sort of together in parallel. And so we did so many projects and so we know each other. And you could think at that stage, you know, it's getting tired, but it's not. Every time we have like, it's like, again, it's like day one, you know, we challenge each other. We love what she does. We have a fantastic relationship and we are very lucky because she's, yeah, again, so talented. She's doing so many projects.
Great. And we're very happy to see that because Dorothy has been one of our judges on the Ahead Europe Awards and we're very familiar with her work. So look forward to seeing more from her with the Experimental Group going forward. And talking of going forward, let's talk about the recent investment you've had by Brookfield from the US. Can you just tell us about the deal and perhaps why you decided to go down this route of raising funds in this way?
So it was an semi-old ideas of ours, which was we investing a lot into you know a property when we take it over. We built a hotel where it was like, you know, an empty office building, or we renovate fully, you know, a hotel that was like derelict, and we just have a lease and the right to pay a rent. And we don't benefit from the value we create on the property and we don't control the property fully. So we were looking to, you know, simply a smart way to make real estate acquisition and strategically control the asset and being able to invest the right amount to do, you know, a great hotel. So we went around and we find, Brookfield, which are like a stellar, you know, real estate investor. And we created a joint venture with them to be able to acquire together as many hotels as we find, in a way. So we started last September with a fund with, you know, a right nice like 350 million euros of equity that we raised because, you know, real estate is expensive. So it looks like a big number, but it's nothing, you know, insane for this area. It's just we're going to continue pretty much doing the same as we were doing before, except this time we'll control the real estate. So, you know, probably 3-4.
Exactly. So this is the big shift, I think, is the fact that you've gone from just being an operator to being an owner operator. And I love the fact that you saw it say there, you know, we have this arrangement and the only right that we have is to pay our rent. Yeah. It's also a duty and obligation, but yeah. I quite like the fact that you think it's a right.
Yeah, exactly. No, but, and And it can become a bit frustrating over time. Especially it's like when you're a great tenant, you know, I mean, you just increase the price of your own property. So it's all like very, very circular. So now, which is great, is like we have this strategic, you know, firepower that we've been using already for, you know, we did already 4 acquisition since last September, and it keeps going. Great partnership. We're very, very happy the way it goes. We stay in charge. That's the idea. You know, we are the managing partner, so we take all the decision within obviously a corporate structure. But the idea is that we lead the development and the operations. We do confirmatory research, which means we still have, you know, the gut feeling. We still identify, you know, the properties. We still come up with the hypothesis. Now we are in a obviously structured environment with institutional fund managers, with big lenders, and yes, of course, we are not crazy, and we do research and due diligence to confirm our hypothesis. And so far, they are being confirmed.
One thing I really do want to talk to you a little bit about is this idea of sustainability. Is this something that you're concerned about, or indeed Brookfield are concerned about?
Yeah, no, they are, and we are as well. It's just we are very pragmatic. So as I was saying before, we're taking over a lot of, you know, old building with old fabrics that you have to respect. So you cannot always apply, you know, the new norms and the new labels to old places. Now we try to be smart. We try to be smart and do everything we can to reduce the energy consumption, to, you know, like put you know, insulation where we can, definitely water use. I think we're putting all the place under like a label, which is the Green Key label, and one of my partner Olivier is very, very focused on that, and is leading the charge. We are just very pragmatic.
Looking at your properties and how each one is very different, partly because they are old buildings, they all have their own heritage and what have you. As you expand, do you think you can keep this difference, or is it going to become slightly more formulaic?
It's essential for us that it's very challenging and difficult, because it would be easier to have one or two concepts and roll them out. Right now, we're still under the same strategy to develop places that are very unique, very interesting, you know, on their own, and try to bring our touch without losing that uniqueness. So every project is started from scratch. So we'll do it for as long as we can. And I think it's still doable with the gross expectations we have.
Let's talk about those expectations. How fast do you think you are planning to expand with this new investment?
Three, four hotel a year for 3-4 years, give or take, depending
on the
size.
That'll keep you busy.
That will keep us nicely busy. But you see, it's not so different than what we did in 2019, when we opened, you know, Venice, Menorca, and Verbier in the same year in 3 very difficult destinations. So we're going to be very Europe-focused. You know, we love it. We think it's great to create a bit of density as well in the way then you manage the property. As you were saying before, I mean, we're very involved. We like to be able to go often, you know, like to the place to see our team, to see our people. So Europe is definitely our playground for now. Now we love to go to New York. We've been, you know, operators in New York for the last 10 years. And that would be a great entry, you know, like to the US. The market being what it is right now, it's a bit difficult to maybe take a view, you know, on the right price of properties. So for now, it's in standby, but we keep looking. And as you said, yeah.
Especially given the strength of the dollar against the euro right now. That's very tough.
Yeah, it's very tough. And obviously, you have to think about that when you make, you know, a substantial real estate investment. But yeah, like lots of opportunities in Europe. We're still looking in Spain. We're still looking in Italy. We would love to go like to Rome and Milan on top of Venice.
Talking of Italy, you're actually in Florence today. You tell me that's for a holiday, but I'm guessing you might also be having a little sniff around a few hotels, a few properties. Would that be correct?
Yeah, for sure. You know, you can. I can't help. No. I love Florence. We're seeing a few things. Is it for us? Does it need us? It's also a question we ask ourselves. You know, what are we going to bring to the game? And you know, I'll tell you after the couple of days I'm spending here. But we love Italy for sure. Always been. And if it's not Florence, Tuscany. Tuscany could be, you know, like an area where we could replicate a little bit what we did in Menorca. You know, our vision of a country, you know, resort, maybe making some wine, you know, some olive oil, thinking about the future. That could be an option.
Business and pleasure, but you are in the business of pleasure, let's face it. What about in the UK? I see that you've recently taken over Cowley Manor, a great little hotel and spa in the Cotswolds.
Yeah, look, it's a place. It's great in when you have this change. It's a place that I've been going to personally for the last 10 years, where I have, like, you know, fond memories, the whole story around it. So when I heard about it and got a chance to meet the owners, it was really it was a full circle. You know, it felt like extremely natural. It felt like meeting people I knew already. And then we got a chance, you know, to do the transaction, and I was like, wow, a dream come true. And now we're gonna look after it and bring it back, you know, to our new standard. Love the Cotswold, love this area of the British countryside. I mean, it's quintessential. It's just fabulous. It's something that I think cannot be replicated. You know, there is so many little villages, so many little pubs, so many interesting places to go, and it's so close, you know, from London. So we're very excited. It's not so small, you know. We have like 50 acres, 31 rooms that we're going to bring to 36, and a fantastic spa with, you know, indoor, outdoor pool, treatment room that has a membership, because it's we're very much in tune with the local community.
Brilliant. I'm sure they'll all be very happy, and we're happy to have more of the experimental group doing their thing in the UK. Pierre Charles, I think that's a fantastic roundup of what you guys are doing and what you're trying to do and where you're planning to go. Thank you very much indeed for your time. I love the fact that hospitality for you is really putting the guest at the top of the pile. And keep, please, surprising and also reassuring us at the same time. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Guy. Thank you.
Many thanks to Pierre Charles Cross of the Experimental Group for joining us for this episode of the Sleeper 2022 podcast series. Post-production is by James Green at Green Podcast Productions, with promotion by Eleanor Howard. I'm Guy Dietrich. Thank you very much for listening.